Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's weekly wrap-up. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, of course, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Usually, we like to keep this show geared to the actual wrestling part of professional wrestling, but it's very difficult to do that this week because a couple of things outside of the world of professional wrestling has infected the universe, and we're going to need to talk about it. And one of the first things is that Nash Carter has been released by NXT, the WWE. And this was amidst allegations from Impact worker and his soon-to-be ex-wife, Kimberly, that he was physically and mentally abusive. Now, what I'm being told is that she offered some pictures of what she called physical abuse and offered some stories of mental abuse, but I'm also being told that this is not why he was fired, that the WWE did not believe Kimberly, mostly because this happened just a couple of days after she was served with the divorce papers. So it sounds very revengey. And I know that his current friends are really coming out in favor of him, saying this is baloney. She had a vendetta against him since they separated. He's not that type of a person. He actually was trying to get away from her mental abuse. A lot of people have been very vocal. Obviously, one of the workers there is, I believe, his current girlfriend, Gigi, and she tweeted and basically said, I'm sickened at the world after hearing of his release. But here's the real situation. Apparently, a picture surfaced that she had, Kimberly had, of him a while ago, dressed up with a little Hitler mustache, giving the Hitler salute. And I guess that was the straw that broke the camel's back for the WWE. I guess the WWE said the allegations, you know, need to be proven, but this is a picture that's going to come back to haunt you. Now, you got to be very careful with this. I'm going to tell you why. Your very first instinct is to sit and look at the picture and say, okay, what kind of an idiot dresses himself up to look like Hitler and give that salute? Obviously, he's a moron. Maybe he believes some of this stuff. But then you got to think, what was the circumstances involving the picture, and give the guy a chance to respond? I want people to remember something. Remember Monty Python? John Cleese and the whole gang of Monty Python, and they used to do that skit where he'd put his finger over his lip and talk in a German accent and do the silly walk, and people loved it, and they clapped and laughed, and he was making fun. We don't know the circumstances involving that picture. We don't know for sure that he was saying, this is my hero, and I believe everything he says, or if he was saying, I'm mocking him in some bizarre way. We don't know what that circumstance was. And until we do, how are we supposed to judge? How are we supposed to judge? Right? So I understand the WWE's point of view. They just don't want the bad publicity. But I also understand that there's a thing in this world called innocent until proven guilty. Now, he took the picture. I think what I would have done is I would have called him in and said, under what circumstances did you take this picture? Can you please explain it? And if it was done in some kind of satirical thing, I dressed up one and we were going to do a play, or we were doing a skit, or we were doing something, well, you know, there are actors in Hollywood who played Hitler. Should they be banned? Should they be banned forever from ever doing a movie because they portrayed Hitler? See, this is the problem, folks. We can't jump the gun and automatically assume what's in someone else's head. We can look at a picture, but a picture doesn't give you the entire story. The picture only gives you the picture. Where did it come from? Was he in a play? Was he dressed up for some kind of a bizarre skit they were doing in some wrestling federation or some other thing? We don't know yet. But I will say this. I've said it from the very beginning. You cannot and should not have an allegation against you simply be the fact because someone made that allegation. Because if you go down that road, you're really setting yourself up for major trouble. Kimberly can say what she wants. Maybe she's correct. I don't know her, and I don't know him. He might have beat her up every day. He might be a scumbag. But until it's proven, I have to assume he's innocent. Was he arrested? No. Did you call the police on him? No. Are there files in the local police area of domestic violence and being called to the house? No. That's why the WWE was not going to release him for this, because they did not believe her. So now you have to ask yourself another question. She had possession of the picture. It's obviously from several years ago. Why did she keep it? What's the significance of holding onto that picture if she found it so horribly insulting and evil and vile? Why would you hang on to that picture? Why would he hang on to the picture? Well, he didn't, apparently. She did. So I want to know why Kimberly had that picture. What was the purpose that it served? I'm no fan. I'm going to tell you right now, I never liked the tag team. Or particularly him. But you can't just release somebody and say, well, 7 years ago, you dressed up and mocking, you know, Hillary Clinton or somebody, and we don't like that. So, or you dressed up in a outfit we don't care for. So you're gone. Okay, well then, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you, because there are people currently working in the WWE has done far, far, far worse. Far worse. There's currently people working in AEW's done far worse. So this is it's a weird territory, Mike. I don't know what to say about this. I'm not a big fan of someone coming up with just a picture, which is just one single moment in time with no backstory or explanation, and saying because of this picture, which looks bad, you're fired with no explanation to what context this picture could possibly hold.
Absolutely. I mean, kind of reminds me of two other situations. Remember the situation with Riddle? And then, of course, he's still there, but remember the situation with Enzo? You know, the lady and all that stuff, and she tried to blackmail him or whatever it was that had happened at that point, and yeah, there's drugs in the room, but it came out later that she was on the phone to her friends and saying, "Look who I was with tonight," and all that stuff. This kind of
right.
That whole situation. Why is this? Yeah, there was a who was the picture of the woman? Who was the woman that had a picture on her Twitter feed of her standing in front of a swastika or something. I think she
yeah,
was
that
tied,
was,
at one point she was that was Seth,
tied to Seth
Rollins. Yeah.
Yes. And it turns out it wasn't even a swastika. It was something else. It was some other symbol. Yeah, and Derek in the chat room made a good point. He said, you know, Sami Zayn's dressing up as Fidel Castro every single night. That's absolutely correct. I don't understand why people don't get that. I've said that for a long time. That's Sami Zayn took Fidel Castro's outfit, and he's wearing it. Now, you could say, well, he's calling himself the great liberator. He's calling himself this. He's calling himself that. He's trying to gimmick it up. Yeah, that's what he's doing for a gimmick. Okay, Well, then that's what he's doing for a gimmick. He's still wearing it. That man's responsible for a lot of deaths. But nobody finds that offensive. Nobody finds that offensive at all. See, here's the thing. I guess maybe I'm different than some people, but here's what I think. I think you do not have to be a nice person to be employed. I think you do not have to be a moral person to be employed if you stay within the law. In other words, if tomorrow Bobby Lashley were to come out and say, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't like white people. I never liked white people. I never will like white people. I don't forgive them for the whole slavery thing. I think they're all the same, and I don't like them. I would not call for him to be fired. He has the right to think what he wants. It makes him an idiot. But there are a lot of idiots who have a job. Now, if he did something illegal, that's different. Also, I could understand if the WWE fired him by saying, well, you have the right to your views, but we don't want to be associated with those views. That I get. But that's not what this Nash Carter guy did. You didn't even give him a chance to say, what is the picture? In what context was this picture? And if he says, oh, that was back in a phase where I was into the, you know, World War II and the Nazism thing. Okay, then you know what? Maybe it's better we part company. If you had some ties in any way, shape, or form to that, maybe this isn't someone we want to keep on our roster. Even though you're a different guy now, this is going to come back to haunt us. We don't need this. That's a company. But if he says we were doing some kind of a skit, a play, or something or other, well, come on, folks. I do know this. When someone tries so hard to get you fired as opposed to get you arrested, they probably don't have any proof. See, because if Kimberly had all this proof, all she had to do was go to the police and say, I want this guy arrested. He's made my life living hell for I don't know how long. I have pictures of my injuries. I have dates and times. And he would have been arrested. And had he been arrested and charged with domestic violence, I would have said, absolutely fire him. You can't have somebody like that on the roster. That's just going to bring down the whole company. But that doesn't sound like what's happening here. It sounds like a revenge thing. And if we start to turn the Me Too movement into a revenge movement of women who were scorned or divorced, Todd, we got big trouble.
I'm absolutely right there, like you said, with the situation with this Nash Carter and Kimberly situation, the controversy. It sounds like she's just trying to frame him. Maybe she just don't like him or something. Just want
well,
to
obviously she don't like him now. They're getting divorced. But I think if you held on to that picture, you held on to it as collateral. I have an ace in the hole. If I release this picture, it's going to destroy his career. It just seems to me to be the deal, right? Otherwise, why would you hang on to a picture like that? Anyway, worse news, sad, really sad news. Tammy Sitch is back in jail, and this time it's fairly serious, folks. Not that the other times weren't. I mean, drug addiction and things like that's very serious. But this time it involved actually someone dying. She got into a car accident. They've deemed it her fault, and a 75-year-old man was killed. And she was apparently under the influence. This has got to be one of the saddest stories in the history of professional wrestling. And there's some sad stories in the history of professional wrestling. But this has got to be right up there with some of the saddest, because there was a time in this woman's life when she had the world by the ass. She was the number one most downloaded celebrity, not wrestler, not valet, celebrity in the world. In the world. She could have parlayed that into a career that we can only imagine. Television, movies, maybe reality TV show. Look what The Miz has done. You know what I mean? He's parlayed his reality, which was going into a really good wrestling career and then back to reality and game show hosting and Dancing with the Stars. He's going to have a huge career. He has a huge career. He's going to have a huger one even when he retired. He's going to have a huge career. Tammy Sitch could have been the same. She had the world by the ass. Everybody knew her name. She became probably the best-known diva in the history of the WWE, and my thought on it is because she was exceedingly pretty, but she wasn't unobtainably pretty. She wasn't one of those girls that you say she'd stepped right out of a fashion magazine. She didn't look like that. She looked like that girl next door knockout that you were just like, wow, that she's fantastic, but she's real. She was the anti-Sable. You know, Sable always looked like a fashion model who was going to walk down a runway. Sonny looked like the type that was going to go out and, you know, play basketball with you. You know what I'm saying? And for whatever reason, she could not keep those demons at bay. And now, tragically, it's affected someone else. It's bad enough that it's affected her own life and put her in trouble with the law and rehab and other things. But now someone is dead. And this is very serious. And all we can do, I mean, what can we do except there's nothing to really even say at this point. There's nothing to say. I can't feel sorry for her because you've killed someone. Your actions took someone else's life. So I can't bring myself to feel sorry for her other than to just say, I hope if anything comes out of this, it's that this is it. This is the final straw. This is what gets her clean and keeps her clean. I think it was just alcohol, but I don't care what it was, whether it was drugs, alcohol, I don't care. She got behind the wheel of a car and a man is dead. It's just a shame, Mike, to see how quickly and tragically her life has totally fallen apart.
Yeah, 20 years ago, you know, even 20 years ago, you know, she still had the world by the ass, you know? I mean, and it's not like she doesn't look bad now. Now, granted, nobody takes a good mugshot. That's a fact, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, I think her spiral began when her, I guess, husband or whatever died, Chris Candido.
Yeah,
but we can argue about that on another day. Yeah, it's just sad that this woman. Yeah, you're right. She's pretty, but she wasn't the type of woman that, you know, you look at some of these women that have come along since, even to some extent, you know, the Bellas, you know, they look like they're fashion models at times.
Right.
Even Lana, you know,
right.
Even Lana,
yeah,
looks like she's a fashion model, you know, whereas people like, Tammy says, people like, Edge's wife, Beth Phoenix, you know, even to some extent, Charlotte Flair, she's attainable, you know.
But for some reason, Sonny had she had a perfect blend. I mean, you look at Charlotte Flair, she's a very pretty woman, and you look at Beth Phoenix, and she's a very pretty woman, but Sonny had something different. There was just for some reason, she was considered the hottest diva because there was a relatability. She didn't seem like a stuffed shirt, I'm, you know, walking out in Versace type person. She felt like the person that would be, like I said, playing basketball with a gang. And she just happened to be extraordinarily beautiful. And for some reason, she radiated that feel of the girl next door. And it really, really grabbed people. I said in the Knickerbocker Arena, back then it was called the Knickerbocker, in Albany, New York. Now I think, I don't know what it is. It was the Pepsi Arena for a while. I don't know what it is now. But she came out prior to a TV taping. That place was full. And I cannot tell you the reaction she got. It was unbelievable for someone who didn't wrestle. She got in that ring to warm up the crowd, and that's exactly what she did. She talked for a couple of minutes, threw out a couple of calendars that had her in it, and the crowd was nuts. And I said, my God, she's got people in the palm of her hand. I'm telling you, she had whatever it was, that something extra that we often talk about. She had it in abundance. And she's tossed it all away. I mean, it's sad. It's totally sad. Our hearts go out to the families of the poor man who's 75 years old, minding his own business, driving along. What can you do? Anyway, on a little bit more wrestling-related news, Raw had one of its highest ratings, well over 2 million for the first hour, well over 2 million, which is a good sign. It means that everyone basically liked WrestleMania and tuned in to see what the aftermath was going to be. Unfortunately, it was a bad show, so I don't know if that's going to radiate into any more better ratings this week. I don't know. But the controversy that's going on right now is what's going to happen tonight with Roman Reigns and the titles. Because I've been told two very distinctly different things by two people I trust. So I don't know which one is right, so I'm going to give you both. One is that they're going to unify the belts tonight, and both of those belts are going to go into one. And Roman Reigns will debut the brand new title. The second one is that Roman Reigns is hurt. And he's going to relinquish them both. And there's going to be some kind of a tournament for the title. Because he's not going to be around for a little while. Now, I heard no indication that Roman Reigns was hurt. But I know that the match at WrestleMania ended early. I know because I went back and watched and I seen Brock Lesnar actually ask him if he was all right. So, and you can watch it too. If you've got it DVR'd, go back and watch it and you'll see Brock Lesnar checking on him. I don't know if that translated into an injury that's legit or it was just I'm hurt for the time being, but I'm fine an hour later, or a couple hours later, or the next day. I don't know. But two people who usually are good sources of mine, one tells me he's definitely hurt and doubt very greatly he's going to hang on to those belts. If he does, they're going to play it like he's going to go away for a little while, have a vacation or something. He's not going to be around a little bit. They may not say he's injured. Now, the other person is telling me he's not injured. He was slightly injured, but he's not going to miss any time. He's going to be fine. They're going to stall for a week or two. He'll be fine. And they're going to unify the belts tonight. So we'll see which one is right. But that's two very distinctly different stories, Todd. Which one do you think is likely more accurate?
Like I said the other night, when we watched that pay-per-view, that match with Lesnar and Reigns there, it looks like he was definitely injured himself. And he didn't say Monday night or he's going to relinquish the belt or unify it. It looks like it's going to be more he's going to probably end up giving the belt up.
Boy, that'll be something. I mean, I don't know. I guess there could be a third option, and that third option is if they think it's only going to be a few weeks or a month, they could unify it if that's what they wanted to do and just have him not defend it. He doesn't defend it on television anyway. So unless it was going to be months, a couple of months, they could probably stall for time and not even mention it, Mike.
Yeah, really. And look, I mean, the other thing is if you go back and you watch what happened on Raw when he came out, what did he do when did the belt thing? He took the belt. He did what he usually does and took the belt in his hands and raised the belt over his shoulder. Now, you tell me, if he's hurt, could he have done that?
It wouldn't seem likely if it was a shoulder injury. It wouldn't seem likely if he tore a rotator cuff or something like that. I'm being told it was a bicep tear. I don't know if he could do that. I don't know. I really don't know. They're keeping this one kind of quiet. If he's injured, I'll tell you this. I've heard nothing about it except from one source. So either they're keeping it really, really on the down low, or it was just one of those things. But I can tell you for sure that the match at WrestleMania ended early, and it wasn't because they needed to wrap up. They were running out of time. There was time left. And you could tell it was a rushed ending. You can tell they were told to just go home with it. So something happened that day. Or that night, I should say. Not sure which. Whether it's a minor injury or it was something that's going to be, you know, around to haunt them for a month or two. We'll see tonight, I guess. I think it's probably more likely they're going to unify the belt, because if they're having him come out, it's probably not a super serious injury. But now the question remains, well, what next? Who's the next guy up? Is it going to be Drew McIntyre? I guess it could be, but I don't think anybody thinks Drew McIntyre is legitimately taking the title. Now it seems like all the buzz is Cody Rhodes. If they are going to do that, and they are going to make it Cody Rhodes, my assumption would be they're not going to unify the title so Roman Reigns can keep one, because I know the big plan is for WrestleMania next year to be The Rock versus Roman. I know that is really what they're hoping for. And they've had to plan that far ahead of time, because that's how big a star The Rock has become, where he has to plan his schedules way ahead of time. Way ahead of time. So we'll see. I mean, tonight should be very interesting. I also want to tell, because there was a lot of people who asked me about this, including a good friend of mine, who wrote me and said, did you hear Pat McAfee literally say he had no idea he was going to fight Vince McMahon? And no idea he was going to take a stunner. How could they possibly pull that off? It's very easy. He's lying. I mean, he's not really lying. He's just not breaking, you know, kayfabe. He knew he was fighting Vince McMahon. The proof of it is that we now hear that backstage, people were telling Vince McMahon for months, this is a bad idea. Don't get in the ring and do anything physical, Vince. It's a bad idea. But Vince insisted. Now, it was a disaster. As you saw, he couldn't take the stunner the right way. Wasn't exactly anything with Pat McAfee that was any good. But Vince was quoted as saying, everybody was laughing, everybody was entertained, so it doesn't matter. So he was taking it as, it really doesn't need to be a stellar performance by me, as long as everybody was laughing, as long as everybody had fun, as long as there was that little bit of nostalgia, it's okay. So there's your proof that Pat McAfee's not telling the truth. Now, the second thing I would tell you is this. If you think Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to assume you know how to take a stunner from him and say, oh, well, I don't know who this guy is, but I'm just going to give him a stunner out of the clear blue sky, or I know who he is, but I didn't tell him I was going to give him a stunner and let's just see how this goes, that's never happening. That's never going to happen in a professional wrestling ring, not ever. So McAfee is just trying to toe the line there, Mike. So regardless of what he says, he knew he was fighting Vince McMahon and he knew he was taking a stunner from Steve Austin.
Right. He's just being a good company guy, you know, and that's what you want, you know. Think about it. I mean, and look, yeah, it was hot. It was a hot piece of crap, you know, that whole stunner deal. But then again, what do you expect from, you know, a guy who's 57 years old who obviously knows how to give the move, but the other guy, even though they have their chemistry, the other guy is, what, 75, 78, 77, whatever, yeah. Whatever year, whatever Vince is. You know?
Yes.
What do you expect? I think he took the stunner the best way he knew how at that age.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't good. It made Steve Austin laugh. And it just, but here's the exact comparison I'll make. Vince McMahon, who, yes, he has wrestled. yes, he's trained to wrestle, and he has wrestled full matches, isn't what you would call a lifetime wrestler. Somebody like Mae Young was, and look how she took moves, even in her late 70s. So you can appreciate more the Mae Youngs and the people like that when you see this thing with Vince. That's probably the truth. Vince probably took that the best he could, and that it wasn't good. I would argue that if Mae Young was still alive, she'd have taken it better. It's just the nature of the business, I suppose. But yes, Pat McAfee is towing company policy. He absolutely knew every single thing that was going to happen in that ring. I promise you he did. Now let's go to AEW. Apparently something happened in the tapings in Boston, where I guess Sammy Guevara and his new girl were really heckled pretty bad. Listen, they've been going on social media with bullshit, and I've been warning people about this. I've been warning and warning people about this. If you want to use your social media correctly, it can be a very, very, very powerful tool to publicize yourself. If you use it incorrectly, you can destroy yourself. I would point to Bray Wyatt as someone who uses it the right way and understands what it's there for. And I would point to people like Nia Jax who didn't and would get into ridiculous little spats with fans and nonsensical arguments for no reason and drama that didn't need to be there. Absolutely didn't need to be there. This is why I say that I'm not necessarily against a federation regulating someone's Twitter or their Instagram or whatever it happens to be. I'm not necessarily against that because you're using their name. Okay? I know that like Alexa Bliss uses Lexi Kaufman or what, I get it, but it still is that the real Alexa Bliss, right? She's representing WWE on that Twitter account. So whatever she says is a representation of WWE. If you want to have your own personal one that doesn't have the at Alexa Bliss and you don't talk anything about wrestling, okay, I have a social media band account for my band. I don't talk about wrestling. I don't talk about politics. I don't talk about anything controversial. I talk about music. And I promote music. If you're going to be a wrestler and you're going to actually stay in that character and use that name, I truly and honestly feel you should stay in character to some degree and you should use it just to promote what's happening in your life. Not who your girlfriend is, not what you had for breakfast, nothing, not your views on social stuff. I think it's a mistake. And for that reason, Mike, I'm not necessarily against federations monitoring or even actually physically posting things. I know that WWE does it on Facebook. If you go to some of the Facebook accounts and you see the posts, they're not coming from the wrestler. They're coming from some social media executives who are posting on their behalf.
Absolutely, and you're right. Bray Wyatt got in a lot of things. Bray Wyatt was one of the smartest, shrewdest people in there. He got things. I mean, when he was with the WWE, I would go every so often. I would go to his Twitter feed, and I would see he would post something. It would be very cryptic, very, you know, this is going to happen, but it might happen, or just a picture of some symbol or something, and you would see on Twitter that people were talking about what Bray Wyatt was saying on Twitter because, well, they, for one thing, they didn't understand what he was saying; they couldn't get it. You know, it was a question. It was a mystery. You know, he got it. He knew how to use his Twitter. And there are other people that are that way, that there are other wrestlers that are that way that know how to use their Twitter, you know. Just some of these wrestlers just don't understand it and just don't get it.
No, I don't think they do. Let's give an example. Let's say Rick Boogs has his account. It's okay for him to comment on wrestling, upcoming feuds, people within the WWE. It may even be okay for him to comment on his favorite bands. But let's say he says, oh, you know, Metallica's come out with something I really like. And four people say, Metallica sucks, or you're an idiot if you like Metallica. Then you don't respond. Okay? You leave it alone. That's all you need to do. Stay within your character. Rick Boogs is a rock guitar player, so if he wants to comment on rock and roll and guitar playing or guitars or his, you know, wrestling, that's what you do. If Bray Wyatt wants to comment on his, you know, the weird sort of eclectic lifestyles and the weird symbolisms, or maybe even comment on a horror movie or something that he's seen, fine. When it gets to the point where they try to engage you in a back-and-forth argument, that's when you need to stop, because you're now representing your company. I'm not going to get into a back-and-forth exchange with somebody in character and then me break character and say, okay, now you pissed me off as a real person, so now I'm going to talk to you differently. That's where you make your mistake. Xavier Woods, he wants to go on there and talk about video games. Fine. Because that's his character. And everybody knows he has the up, up, down, down thing. That's fine. But stay in your lane. Because when you start doing things like, well, I'm going to go on and mention that I didn't like what somebody said politically, or I don't like this particular thing that's happening in the world, you know you're going to get negativity. So you're just setting yourself up to get into an argument with people and isolate half of your fan base, which is idiocracy at its finest. And yet they do it time and time again. So if I'm Tony Khan, I'm Vince McMahon, I tell him, you make those mistakes, you're not going to be allowed to have one. If you think that's far-reaching and overbearing and whatever, too bad, then don't take my money. But you're not going to represent my company in a way I don't like using your private social media to do it. That would be like if I worked for Coke and all I did was go on and say, you know, Coca-Cola really sucks, and I drink mostly Pepsi. And at some point you're going to have to say, well, okay, if you're just going to do this, then we can't have you here, because you're badly representing the company you work for. You have a right to not like the product you make. And you have a right to drink Pepsi instead of Coke. You don't have a right to badmouth us and then take our money and represent our company in a negative way. Simple as that. So in other words, if I'm working for a company, I don't have the right to say, I don't think any drugs at all should be legalized, not even marijuana. I think it all should be illegal. I'm sorry, that's the way it goes. Because then I'd isolate people. I also don't have a right to say I think every drug should be legalized. Heroin, do whatever you want. Free to do whatever you want. Because it has nothing to do with my job. And I don't know if that represents the company's policies. And you can say, well, it's your personal account, so it doesn't have to. But yeah, because I'm using the name that they've given me. And at WWE or at AEW or whatever the hell it happens to be. So, yes, I am representing them. You can't do it. I'm sorry. You just can't. Todd, that's a lesson I think more wrestlers need to learn.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they should leave their personal personal problems at home, stick with professional things like this, like, this, if you have like a music Facebook page or Twitter page or band page you're in or part of, discuss music. If you're a wrestler or whatnot, you discuss that. Leave the other stuff at home, out of it.
Yeah, I think, Mike, that at some point the people in charge of these federations, which would be Vince and Tony Khan. They're going to have to rein some of this in.
Right. And think about this. You know, Charlotte, if you go to her Twitter feed, she never mentioned, you know, that her dad got fired by the WWE. All right.
Right.
But if she would have had a Twitter feed, say, that said Ashley Fleer, FLEIHR, which is actually how they spell Rick's last name, and she would have mentioned it there, then you wouldn't have any problems because it's her personal feed. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. That's my point. If I have a personal account and I only add people who I either know or friends of friends or people I've become closer to, then they're going to have to accept my views the way they are. But if I'm trying to promote something and it's virtually a lot of strangers and people I don't know who are going to be flocking to that site, then I have to be mindful that what I think may not be what they think, and it would be better if I just kept my own personal thoughts to my personal account. Exactly correct. So if Edge has a personal account and he says, I'll tell you the truth, I think that, you know, vaccines should be forced on people. That's not his job. Now, if he wants to do that as Adam Copeland, and he's not accepting fans, you know, wrestling fans who are asking to be, you know, friends or whatever, he's just saying, no, this is my personal people who I know, business contacts and friends and family, you go ahead, knock yourself out. Say whatever you want. That's your right. But you shouldn't be doing it as Edge, because that's different. Even if your name's still your name, even if it's really your name, then just have a personal account and a public account. And don't add fans to your personal account. Only add fans to your public account. That's all you need to do, folks. It's not hard. It's not rocket science. Now, Corey Graves and Carmella are apparently getting married this weekend. In fact, I think it might be tonight. And they're going off on their honeymoon. So filling in for Corey Graves for the next couple of weeks is going to be Jerry the King Lawler. Now, this was met with a mixed bag of, oh, why didn't they get somebody new? Why does it always have to be an older timer? And people who said, geez, this should be great. Well, count me in the latter category. I have always enjoyed Jerry Lawler. I thought Jerry Lawler has more on the ball as an announcer than probably almost anybody, except maybe right now Pat McAfee. I would love to see him and Pat McAfee work together at some point. If him and Pat McAfee work together... I don't know, man. You might have something really good. You might have something really, really good there. But anyway, he's going to be filling in. Mike, I think it's a good thing. I always love to listen to Jerry Lawler's commentary. I always think he does a good job at putting people over.
Right. And you're absolutely right. I mean, look, he's worked with different people before, and we've said how good he is. I mean, we know how good he can be with JR, right? You know, we know that, mm-hmm. And I tend to agree with you. You put McAfee and Lawler together on the same team, you wouldn't need a third man.
No.
I mean, think about it. The enthusiasm from both of those two guys, the enthusiasm for McAfee is, we've said it before, McAfee has something that the crowd just automatically gravitates to him. Jerry Lawler has that same thing.
Yeah, and they're both so different. That's why I think they'd work well together. McAfee comes across as your goofy friend who really loves wrestling, and you're sitting down to watch it with him, and he gets so into it. You ever watch, like, a baseball game, and you're into it, but your friend is, like, nuts. Your friend is, like, a real fanatic fan, and every pitch is, you know, they're jumping out of their seat, and they're criticizing, they're yelling and screaming, and you're getting more of a kick out of them. I remember one time I went to a minor league baseball game, and I decided, you know, I'm getting my money's worth here. And there was a good game, but I thought there was some problems with how they were managing the team. I was screaming my lungs out. And I remember a lady at the seventh inning stretch who was sitting behind me tapped me on the shoulder and said, I came here with my husband, and I don't really like baseball, but I have to tell you that I've been very entertained. You're very entertaining. I was listening to you, you know, give your opinions on this game, and it's more entertaining than the game. See, that can happen. So when Pat McAfee is up there dancing on the tables and screaming at the top of his lungs and saying this, that, and the other thing, it's like you're watching it with your friend who's a real big wrestling fan and is really, really hyper about everything. Jerry Lawler, on the other hand, is the guy who knows exactly what he has to sell. He's the guy who says either what you're thinking, or he's the guy who baits you into saying, I hope Lawler is wrong, and then Lawler reacts to it like Bobby Heenan used to do. Heenan did the same thing. Lawler is a master at that. And Lawler knows wrestling inside and out and backwards and forwards and upside down. So those two guys together, yeah, I would pay to see that. I would love just at one event if they would just say, Lawler and McAfee, we're putting you together for one event, one show, just to see what happens. And I'll bet you the result, Todd, would be something absolutely brilliant.
I think you're absolutely right there. Like you said, you put those two together, Lawler and McAfee, you probably see that's a good combination right there. And like you said, with Jerry Lawler with his commentary, I like him doing the heel commentary. His heel commentary is great.
His heel commentary is very good because he always does what he needs to do. He sells the face through the heel. Now, a lot of people will say, well, no, he's always rooting for the heel. Yeah, but that's how he's selling the face. He's the guy who knows that so-and-so's not winning tonight, but he's coming out there saying, you wait and see what's going to happen. He's going to teach him a lesson. And you as a fan are saying, Lawler's wrong. I can't wait to hear Lawler have to eat crow when this guy's getting beat up. And then Lawler loves to eat crow. Lawler's the guy who will say, I'm wrong. Well, you watch. You watch. This guy will be lucky to get two shots in on him. He's going to mop the floor with him. And then when the guy's being thrown out of the ring and turned upside down, Lawler's the guy screaming, ah, what's going on? Why is this happening? That's entertaining because he's baited you into rooting against him and his commentary, where McAfee is the guy who's screaming along with you and getting you excited about what's happening. It's a very, very good combination, Mike. I would really, really like to see that happen.
I mean, look, I remember back in the Attitude Era when it was Lawler and JR. But remember what Lawler was doing back then, and it was basically the same thing we would all be doing, especially with the women when they would come out and he would go, puppies and all that stuff, you know.
Yep.
And that's the type of people they were playing to, and that's the exact reaction that type of fan would have had when you saw Sable or whomever or Sonny or whatever at the time coming out doing what they were doing, you know. And that's where he was, and that's where McAfee is right now. Particularly when he jumps up on the table. Now, Rick Boogs is out, but when Rick Boogs comes out and starts to play guitar for Shinsuke, then he's up there on the table. He's that guy. You look at him, and he's that guy. There are people that probably in their house jump up on their couch every time Rick Boogs comes out and does his guitar, you know?
Yeah, and the thing about him is it doesn't seem fake. It doesn't seem like he's faking enjoying himself. It really looks like he's enjoying himself. It really looks like, and he always says it too, to his credit. He always says, this is a dream job. This is unbelievable. I know when he was hosting the WrestleMania commentary, he was saying, I can't believe that I'm here commenting in WrestleMania. I can't believe it. It's like a dream job. And we all sort of live vicariously through that and say, yeah, that would be me, the excited dude. I'm commenting WrestleMania. This is great. He is a master at that. That's why he has a successful podcast, too. he asked the questions that people want to hear, and he also seems like he's a fan of everyone he interviews. And because of that, you sort of live vicariously through him. He's extraordinarily good at his job, and he has a lot of charisma. Jerry Lawler is extraordinarily good at his job, and he has a lot of charisma. Those two together could mean something really good. Now, we're not going to see. We're going to see mostly, you know, I think we're going to see Lawler strictly on Raw. I don't know. We'll find out. But maybe this will happen down the road. And we'll see. We'll see how that transpires. Now, to the people who are saying, couldn't they have gotten somebody else? Couldn't they have gotten somebody younger? Why do you – I don't understand the philosophy behind that. Why do you want somebody younger? It's not like you're looking at them constantly. You barely see them. Lawler's voice is tremendous voice in wrestling. So you want to get somebody younger to do what? You got Byron Saxton sitting there. He's relatively young. So did you need another, like, a rookie? You want a rookie? I don't. I'm glad Raw's in Jerry Lawler's hands to a degree. I think I'm going to enjoy these 2 weeks. I'm not a huge Corey Graves fan. I think Corey Graves as an announcer can sometimes be very good and sometimes be very bad. He tends to want to try to make it about himself more. And I don't think a good announcer does that, a good commentator. A good commentator sells whatever he has to sell. Bobby Heenan was a master at it. Bobby Heenan made one of the Royal Rumbles, probably the most entertaining Royal Rumble ever, when he was rooting for Ric Flair to win the Royal Rumble. Because Heenan went through such a plethora of emotions, from despair to joy to doomsaying to whatever. It was so much fun to listen to. And when you can add that, you know what a good announcer is? He's like the spices in the food. Okay? The food's the main course. But if you don't put any spices in at all, then it's going to be kind of bland, no matter how well-cooked it is. A good commentator is the spices on the food. Bobby Heenan was a great commentator. Jerry Lawler is a great commentator. Pat McAfee is like that extra dash of pepper that you say you might have put a little too much in, but hey, at least, you know, it's going to be spicy. It's all good. Now, Cole, he's the consummate professional. You need that sort of straight guy, and that's Cole. He's pretty good. Saxton's okay, too. I think Corey Graves and sometimes Mike makes it more about himself, and I don't particularly care for it.
Right. I mean, look, I've cited several times on this show the match that Goldberg came back and he beat Hogan for the WCW title at the time, and who was on? And it was a Nitro match, and who was on that match? It was Schiavone, and it was Bobby Heenan, and I think it was a third guy, but I'm blanking, but. What Schiavone had said at the time, what Heenan had said at the time was this, during the match, and he was drawing on his vast experience with Hogan, and he said, look, Hogan's going to do whatever it takes to win, and I hate him for it, and he's going to take you outside, he's, you know, going outside is a mistake against Hogan and all that stuff, and I didn't take it at the time as a hatred thing. I took it as him speaking from experience with Hogan, you know,
right.
With him and against him, you know, and that's how good somebody like Bobby Heenan was. Yeah, he was emotional during the Goldberg-Hogan match, but it was coming out of the experience of being against Hogan for so many years.
Yeah, Derek is saying in the chat room, wouldn't you rather have somebody commentating that you thought was legitimately enjoying themselves and enjoying what they're doing as opposed to somebody picking up a paycheck? Yes, and that is not just wrestling. That's everywhere. Listen to baseball commentators, you know, and you can kind of tell the difference between there's a fastball inside, there's this, that, and there's a long drive gone, home run. And then listen to the ones who have the passion and the knowledge. And you're like, man, I love listening to them. There are people who will turn on the radio while they're watching the ball game because they like the radio announcers better. Or vice versa. So, you know, listen, the situation is you have to be enjoying what you do. If you do not enjoy what you do, you are the equivalent of the performer who comes out with his guitar, stands in one spot, and says, here's the next song. Nobody wants to listen to the next song because you didn't look like you even enjoyed doing the first one. Same way with the commentators. Now, sometimes you can go too far. You have to be somewhat honest. I don't like when commentators say, this is going to be the most fabulous match. I can't wait to see this. And you're all like, look, this match is not going to be good. Yeah, you got to sell it. You don't have to go nutso. You know, you got to be somewhat honest. But think of what that can do for your career. If you remember right, the primetime players, which was Titus O'Neil and his partner, they were pretty much done in the WWE. They had a match here and there. They always lost. One night they got on commentary with Jerry Lawler, if you remember, and they cracked everybody up between Jerry Lawler and Titus going back and forth. You could literally hear them laughing. They had to turn the microphones away. I remember at one point Jerry Lawler said something about a wash rag, and Titus was like, wash rag? How old are you, Jerry? A wash rag? And you could hear Michael Cole just screaming with laughter. And this rejuvenated Titus. They said, well, maybe Titus has something. The fans all love that. Now, instead of giving him a commentary spot, which they did for a little while, but they put him back in the ring figuring maybe that charisma will come through, and it didn't quite. Or they, I don't know if he really even gave him a fair chance. But let's just say that night made the WWE say, maybe we've missed something here with Titus. If you think for 1 minute, if you watched a Pat McAfee, Vince McMahon interview, the one thing I will tell you, Vince McMahon does not tip his hand. Vince McMahon's a consummate businessman, and he's not going to kiss anybody's ass. But if you watch that, you understand very clearly that Vince McMahon really, really likes Pat McAfee. Because he knows that what he's bringing to the table is exactly what they need. Exactly what they need. So there you have it, folks. A good announcer, just think of Joey Styles, all those years in ECW, Mike, and how wonderful he did a one-man show. And he was so entertaining to listen to, he made the matches that much better.
Yeah, think about this. The night he quit WWE and what he said and how he treated it, that, I was hanging on every word when he did that, you know?
Yes.
You know, and that and he's, I don't know what he's done ever since, but that was an incredible moment when he did that. Now, you know, and I still say this. I still say if you're going to do something with Bobby Lashley, he needs to have somebody to speak for him. And if it's not going to be MVP because you want MVP as a heel, he does better as a heel. You got to find somebody that has a charisma that you can buy as a face, you know, to put with Bobby Lashley. And heck, you know, it's like the only guy I can think of would be Titus.
I would love to see Titus manage Bobby Lashley. I think it would be a hell of a lot of fun. Last thing we wanted to touch on is that Charlotte Flair made a very odd public statement saying that this current title reign she's in is her least favorite title reign. And she said the reason for it is she hasn't really had a chance to wrestle in any real feud. She said Toni Storm quit before the feud was over. It was nice to wrestle Naomi, but it was too short, and she doesn't really feel like she's had any ability to stretch her wings at all. I don't know why you'd say something like that. To me, Charlotte's somebody who's biding her time until her contract runs out. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.